Hi, welcome to Female Trouble. I'm Quinn Kelly, and this is a podcast spotlighting women in Baltimore. When Amy Kollner came upon a group of tattooed women hitting each other on roller skates, she knew she'd found what she was looking for. Amy, otherwise known as Lady Kaboom, found roller derby at a time in her life when she needed to work out aggression, test her limits, and have a blast while doing so. She co-founded the Charm City Roller Girls, Baltimore's only female flat track roller derby league. 11 years later, she's still going strong. In addition to giving me a primer on roller derby, Amy talked about the sport's evolution past fishnet tights and tutus and the increasing athleticism of roller derby players. I went to a Charm City Roller Girls bout last year, and I was naively surprised by both the lack of glitter and by the serious competitiveness of the sport, which Amy explained were pretty common misconceptions. We also talked about what pop culture depictions of roller derby, like the movie Whip It, get right and wrong about the sport, and about roller derby's DIY roots and ethos. By the end of our conversation, Amy had me convinced of the power that comes with knowing how hard you can hit. Here's Amy Kollner. Amy, thanks for coming in.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So imagine I am at my first roller derby match. Is it called a match, by the way?
We call them bouts or games.
Bouts or games. Okay, I'm at my first roller derby bout. I've never been before. I don't know anything about the sport. What am I watching?
What the heck is going on here? Well, what you're watching probably looks like rugby going in a circle on roller skates with no ball, and it's very confusing, but it's actually fundamentally a very simple game. There are two teams on the track at the same time. Offense and defense are played simultaneously. There are offensive skaters and defensive skaters. The defensive skaters, you know, this is something I usually explain with a drawing, and I'm trying to think about how to explain it in a podcast, and it's actually really challenging. So you've got an oval track, and you've got two teams on the track at the same time, five people apiece. Two of those skaters, one from each team, are offensive players. Those are called jammers. They are the ones who score the points. The rest of the skaters are called blockers. They're the defensive players. And their job is to help their jammer through the pack and stop the other jammer. And the way the game is played, basically, you're lapping your opponents for points in two-minute chunks of time over the course of an hour. So once that jammer breaks through the pack with the help of her blockers, she starts lapping her opponents as fast as she can, passing as many as she can, and for every opponent she passes, she gets a point.
So what is a typical point range in a game?
You know, it varies. It varies a lot based on skill of the players, based on the level of gameplay. It just depends. Sometimes it's a multi-hundred point blowout, and sometimes a point spread is a one or two. It just varies.
Is it a pretty fast-paced game to watch?
It can be, although sometimes if you've got a really strong group of skaters on the track, the action almost looks as though it grinds to a halt, and the only person moving is the jammer, or so it seems. But if you look closer, there's quite a bit of strategy and teamwork going on in there, and it's a very physical game. So there are moments where it's very fast, and there are moments where it's almost artfully brutal.
Is roller derby only women?
You know, not so much anymore. In this iteration of it, this generation of the game that sprung out of Texas and exploded all over the world in about 2001 or so is when this resurgence happened. Initially, yes, it was a women's game. But there are a lot of nascent men leagues. They're getting more and more organized. They have an umbrella sanctioning organization like we do. There are fewer of them, but they're out there. And so I think there is more of it than there certainly was 5 years ago.
So you say resurgence. What are the roots of roller derby?
Well, you know, you got to go back to, I want to say, the 1930s. It was initially a race on roller skates with wooden wheels, if you can believe it or not. And it evolved into a sport that a lot of people saw on syndicated television. It was played on a banked track, primarily. The teams were co-ed. And it kind of had a rep as very WWE. It was fairly scripted in a lot of cases, or so it seemed, and it died out. Then a bunch of people decided that they wanted to bring it back in about 2001, and did. And they turned it into a real sport with a real rule set, and it blew out of there like wildfire. Our league plays under a rule set governed by the Women's Flat Track Derby Association, which is comprised right now of 376 leagues throughout the world. We're currently ranked 33, which is pretty good.
So how did you first get into roller derby?
Oh, that's a really good question. Well, you know, like many things in life that take you in a direction where you have no idea where you're going, it started with a gnarly divorce, actually. I was going through a divorce. I was going through a custody battle, and a friend of mine up in Baltimore said, hey, some of us are trying to get a league together here in Baltimore. Why don't you come on up? It's great cardio. And I did. I drove up to a roller rink in Putty Hill, and I looked around, and the first thing I noticed were tween girls rolling around on the rink, and I said, okay, that's not them. And then I looked over in another corner of the rink, and there were these older boys who were jam skating and looking real cool, and I was like, oh, that's not them either. And then I looked in another section of the rink, and there were all these women in their 30s with tattoos, and I said, I bet that's them. And I walked on over, and I found my friend, and, you know, it wasn't a lot of people. It was, you know, maybe four or five of us. And you know, we had no idea what we were doing or what we were getting ourselves into. None of us had really even seen the game played before. And that's what happened. So we started showing up at this roller rink, trying to form this organization. And, you know, have you ever needed something so badly you have to find a way to make it exist? That's kind of what happened. Mm-hmm. So
did it click for you immediately?
It did. It was funny because I skated as a little kid. I used to roller skate. I learned when I was 4 years old. I would roller skate down my street. This was before anybody wore any protective gear. It was 1970, whatever. And my mom would take those big Band-Aids and put them on my knees proactively before I even hurt myself because I was always rocking some horrible scrapes all over my legs from falling on the sidewalk. I used to go to a parking garage in my neighborhood. You know, you're not supposed to be there when you're a little kid, certainly not on roller skate. And I would start at the top and I would go all the way down to the ground floor, you know, over and over and over again. But then, you know, middle school came and I did that dive that middle school girls sometimes do, and I stopped skating and there weren't any roller rinks anymore where I was. And I stopped. But I walk into this rink in 2005 and I borrowed somebody's skates, and it was like I had never been off of them. It was wonderful.
And so that led to the co-founding of the Charm City Roller Girls, which was 11 years ago.
Yeah, it sounds real simple, doesn't it? It wasn't.
It doesn't sound simple, actually. I'd like to know all the bumps along the road.
There have been so many bumps, and it's been a really interesting exercise in organizing, actually, because you have all these different personalities and all these. If you ask 100 people why they play roller derby, they're going to give you 100 different reasons. So when we started, we all knew that we liked to do this. We all knew that we wanted this thing to exist. We all knew that we loved it. But we had to figure out, you know, how to get other people involved. We had to figure out, you know, how do we have a structure so we can have a bank account so we can cut a check to rent the rink for practice time, stuff like that, you know. And that was a lot of research into how to incorporate and what structure to use and how to make it simple but sensible. And then, you know, how do we teach people to do this? How do we learn how to do this? There were no people jumping and throwing their hats in the ring going, why, yes, I would really love to coach a roller derby league, because nobody knew what that was at the time, really. So we taught ourselves. Some people went up to other places. They went to Philadelphia and watched people play this game because they had been around about a year longer than we had. We invited people down to teach us things. And word of mouth and very, very active recruitment wherever we could find people. One of my best friends in the world and she was also a co-founder, had a media background and really, really hustled to get us any and all traction that we could get in any kind of media that we could get. And that helped a lot. And we were lucky to have a group of people right at the beginning there who were dedicated and willing and kind of willing to throw themselves into this without really knowing where it was going or what the heck we were doing.
Before your friend got you in the mix, did you know about roller derby?
I did. In fact, I had heard about what was going on in Texas and had sent out some feelers around D.C., which is a little bit closer to where I lived at the time, and heard nothing back. And there is actually a league in D.C. now. They came into existence about a year after we did. But at the time, there was nothing. And so I didn't hear anything. And, you know, it sounded so great, but there wasn't anything until, you know, lo and behold, we started getting a little traction in Baltimore and managed to maintain it.
What were your misconceptions about roller derby before you started playing?
I don't know if I had any because we didn't really know what it was. So I don't know if it's a preconceived notion, but the sport and spectacle has changed so much since 2005 that, you know, if you look at what our league looked like then and now, they're so completely different. There was a lot more showmanship in the beginning. And, you know, I vividly recall once having to call off a jam, a period of gameplay, because my toe stop was stuck in someone else's tutu. And that doesn't happen anymore. You know, now everybody's lifting and eating quinoa. And, you know, people used to smoke at halftime. So it's funny. We always went into it intending to be athletes and intending to play a contact sport, because there are a tiny handful of contact sports that women participate in still. And we needed this so badly in our lives at the time. But if you look at it today, you know, there's this international body of skaters, and we draw people with athletic backgrounds. And there are people who are making bona fide cash money off of their derby coaching prowess. And, you know, that wasn't the case 11 years ago.
So what about it initially appealed to you? You know, you said it was the right time in your life, mm-hmm. but what elements of the sport really connect with you?
Well, for me, getting into it, I needed an outlet so badly, and it seemed like everything else in my life was of such heavy consequence. You know, this was custody of my toddler that we were talking about. This was keeping my head above water, making not really enough to live on. This was needing a physical outlet just for the rage that goes with all of that insanity. And I think there's a need for this kind of thing in a lot of women's lives. I mean, I know exactly how hard I can hit. There are a lot of women out there who don't know how hard they can hit. It's a wonderful thing to know. It's very empowering. To be able to take something and run with it and really own the experience is wonderful.
Did you find that people responded to this quickly? And was there a void? You know, were there women like, oh, I've always wanted something like
yes
this? Or was
no.
It?
I mean, yes, there were. There were women who were like, roller derby, sign me up. I'm in. Let's do it. I don't even know what that is, but it sounds great. Sure. Sounds great. Let's do it. Let's play a physical sport. Let's do it on roller skates. It's ridiculous. But then there was also this element of... This hasn't happened for a long time, but there was an element of male hangers-on who kind of wanted a piece of it but didn't want to put in the work but wanted a little credit. And I remember getting so angry. There was one time at the roller rink when we were just starting out where this young dude who, you know, Roll Bounce had just come out. Look, man, I was paying a babysitter just to show up, okay? It was hard. My time was precious. And this fool comes up, and he gets all condescending and is like, I really want to help you guys. And, you know, I'm a businessman and my time and blah, blah, blah. And you should take your time. And I was just like, fool, get out of my face. I'm paying a babysitter $10 an hour to be here. No. So we don't run into that anymore, which is good. Or if we do run into it, you know, it's got a lot less traction, I think, than it used to. So it's nice to be past that point.
And roller derby has a strong DIY ethos, right?
Mm-hmm, very much so. You know, look, we show up, we set it up, we tear it down, we take the ticket money, we tape the track down. You know, Ray Lewis, I'm going to quote a friend of mine, you know, Ray Lewis is a great athlete, but he didn't have to show up and paint the 50-yard line beforehand, and we do, you know? So, yeah, we've been doing that for a long time.
Why do you think the sport has moved toward, you know, away from camp and toward more athleticism? Is that just as it's become more established?
You know, that's a really good question. I'm not sure I know the answer to that question. I think, again, it's a need. I think it's just what people need to do, and it's fine. And it's, you know, Camp was fun. Camp was a lot of fun. Putting on fishnets was fun. The glitter was fun. It's still fun. The showmanship is still fun. I still skate under my skater name as opposed to my real name, which is boring. Nobody wants to see Amy Colliner skate. Screw that. You want to see Lady Kaboom. But there's a rush in pushing yourself physically and in the strategy of sports and gameplay. And I think that speaks to a lot of people.
Are you surprised that you're an athlete now? I mean, did you think, you know, did you picture yourself as one?
I will tell you this. I was not raised to be an athlete. I am from a family of couch potatoes. And, and, you know, my inclination is to go back to that someday. But it's a wonderful feeling. I'm strong. I'm fast. I am, you know, I have a never say die about me that I think was probably always there, but that through sports has really blossomed and allowed me a clarity in everything else that I do. The discipline is good for me and wonderful. I can't slide anymore. I'm 42 years old. You know, I'm not going to not take care of myself, because if I want to keep doing this, I have to take care of myself. If I want to keep doing it well, I have to go above and beyond and really take care of my body.
Well, I've heard that the average shelf life, quote unquote shelf life, for a roller derby player is about 2 years. Is that right?
Yeah, that's about what I've heard.
And I think so that's you're at 11.
Yes, I am.
Yes. How did that work out?
I think I just must really need to do this. And you know what? It's amazing what it does to your brain. I have a very cerebral job. My brain is always on at work. It has to be. And the things that I work on are of consequence. And the things in my life outside of derby are of consequence. Roller derby, as serious as it is in terms of, you know, as serious as sports can be, it hones things. It hones the ability to make strategic decisions when you're pumped full of adrenaline. It hones your ability to communicate in a crisis. It hones all of these things. Team sports do that. Contact sports do that. More women should play contact sports for these reasons. But, you know, also at the end of the day, nobody gets fired. Nobody loses custody of their kids. Nobody gets evicted. You know, you're not losing a giant pot of money if you blow the game. So in that sense, it's very low pressure.
So what makes a good derby player, or what makes an excellent derby player?
Oh, well, you know, a lot of things. One of the wonderful things about this sport is there really and truly is a place for every kind of player. There are places for big women. There are places for tiny women. There are places for tall people, short people. We have an age range that's astounding. We have everybody from, you know, a college student to me and people who are older. I'm by far not the oldest player we've ever had on the league at 42. So, you know, when you're looking at putting together a roster or putting together a play or putting together a team, I think of it like kind of like a paint palette. You know, you've got your paint all set out there. You got your blue, your red, your yellow, your green, your purple, your orange, and you get what you get. Let's say you can't really put more paint on that palette. So out of those things on your palette, you put together your best picture. So I think a cool head always helps. Somebody who cares and studies the game helps, right? Somebody who's in shape helps. But, you know, we don't all start there. I don't know. You know, it's wonderful. I'm thinking about my teammates. I'm going through the roster in my head, and there are so many wonderful, wonderful people on this team, and they're all so different, and they all bring something completely different to the bench.
Is this a sport that you can just put half of yourself into? It seems very fervent.
Oh, that's I struggle with this one, because one of my, one of the things I struggle with in this sport at this point in my derby career is that I don't really see locally a way to play this recreationally right this second for me in a way that I would enjoy. Yeah, you really can't half-ass this. If you're going to do it, you kind of got to throw yourself into it and really prepare. And, you know, look, I spend a lot of time working out just so I don't get killed at practice. You know, I feel it every time I take off and take a break and then come back to practice. I can feel that my body's wanting to not do this so much and to stay in the kind of condition where I can play safely and well and enjoy myself and, you know, do my best by my teammates. You know, it's effort and discipline.
Are there young girls playing derby? And is there a new generation coming up?
There are. In fact, we don't have one, but there are a bunch of junior leagues throughout the country right now where girls as young as a one-digit age are playing. We've never really had enough traction with people being interested to do that, to get that rolling, but it's out there. And, you know, yeah, we're getting people now, we're getting people in their early 20s who have athlete backgrounds, which, you know, blows my mind because I came to this sport at 30, you know, and the only athleting I did, I played a little basketball in school and I rode my bike everywhere because I couldn't afford the subway, you know, but that was it. Mm-hmm.
How important is representation? I mean, do you think these young women would know that this was something that they could do if they didn't have, you know, depictions of it?
I think it does matter. I mean, look, one of the reasons I'm still playing is so people like me will keep playing. You know, yes, seeing things makes them seem possible, and it matters, absolutely. I'll tell you, I have a 14-year-old son who has been watching me do this since he was 3 years old. And, you know, we have a lot of kids in our league. We have lots of moms in our league and have had lots of moms in our league and lots of kids who are growing up and have grown up trackside. And it's great. You know, my son has learned that it's okay to have aggression and there is an arena for it. And then when that game is over, you know, we're friends again and we're civil and the rules of society apply, right? He's also learned that it's normal for women to play contact sports. That's completely normal in his worldview, which is mind-blowing and kind of revolutionary. I'll tell you a little story. Once I've broken my legs a couple of times, and this last time coincided with, you know, speaking of, you know, needing a thing, you know, I was going through a rough patch in life, as we are wont to do in life. I was losing my mom to cancer, and I had broken my leg. And my normal coping mechanism, which was to go to practice, I couldn't do it. It was impossible. It was physically impossible. And I was couch-bound and crutch-bound and cast-bound. So that was a really hard time. And once I was through that and was moving again and was going to practice again, I think I was at my kitchen sink and I was doing the dishes and I was muttering to myself. And I'm usually pretty careful about what I mutter around my offspring. But, you know, there I was wearing an extra 20 grief and fracture pounds, which I'm still wearing. That doesn't really bother me because there's a whole hell of a lot of muscle under it. But there I was lamenting over my sink, feeling out of shape, sad, tired, physically exhausted, not in condition. I was kind of muttering about it. And my son, in his full adolescent glory, he says in the most duh tone he can possibly muster, with no irony intended, he says, "Yeah, Mom, you're giant and strong." And I stopped and I was like, "Oh my God, we did it. We smashed the patriarchy. We won. We can all go home now."
It's over. We don't need this podcast. Shut it down.
Yeah. We did it. Yay. Good job, everybody. It blew me away. So.
What are the pop culture depictions of roller derby?
Oh, God. you know, we used to say, and I think we still, you know, is all press good press? I don't know. You know, there's a trope in a lot of derby reporting that gets very, very, very old. And that is blah-de-blah by day, roller girl by night. And you don't write about other athletes like that. You don't. But for whatever reason, this is something that has dogged derby since day one, and we're still trying to shake it. You know, we would like to be written about as athletes. We are athletes. This is an athletic endeavor, and anybody who thinks it isn't is welcome to strap on a pair of skates and try it. So this notion, and, you know, maybe we did ourselves a disservice with the fishnets and the tutus. I don't know. But on the other hand, it was fun. You know? Oh, this idea that it's just prurient elbow throwing, I think, still dogs us a little bit. And, you know, it's not. And, you know, there was also early on, and I don't hear these critiques anymore, but we used to hear these critiques. Well, you're sexualizing yourselves and you're using TNA to get people in the door and everybody's objectified. And I don't know if this is a feminist endeavor or not. And I'm like, please, you know, first of all, that doesn't end when we leave the track. We all know that, right? We walk around in this world female. You are objectified. Every athlete, every female athlete on the planet at some point is sexualized. it happens. Walking around female takes chutzpah. And you're in that beauty pageant you never asked to be in from the day you're born till the day you die. It does not stop on the track. So that argument's never held water to me. But it dogs us a little bit. Mm. You know, it still does.
So I've seen Whip It. I'm sure you hear that all the time. That is the only...
I've seen Whip It.
Are there other roller derby movies? Are there other TV shows? And get things wrong?
Every now and then there's some episode where they talk about roller derby of some show. Like I think CSI Miami did one or something. Some of it they get right and some of it they get real wrong. You know? There's no nefarious coach in the background hiding the donuts while we take our group shower. You know, that doesn't happen. I think it's better than it used to be, but you know, no. I mean, Whip It did a lot of things right. They definitely got that, a lot of the smack talk right, a lot of the bravado right. They got a lot of that right.
What are people most surprised by after they've come to see a roller derby game, or what are their, you know, misconceptions that are proven wrong?
I really do think sometimes it's the athleticism. People, you know, there are astounding athletes playing this game, doing astounding things, getting airborne, jumping apexes, stopping people with their bodies, moving people with their bodies in an artful, strategic way. And I think that surprises people sometimes.
As a DIY sport, do you care if people pay attention? I mean, do you care about media representations? And do you care about growing the popularity?
Personally, I mean, I don't know. So here's the thing. You know, we need a certain amount of resource to be able to do what we do. And growing the sport matters to me personally, because you need to bring in athletes. I mean, people don't do this forever, you know, present company possibly excepted. And it's a wonderful thing. And there have been so many wonderful things that have come out of it for so many people. So it matters in as much to me in terms of continuing the sport's existence. Personally, look, man, if there were no audience, if there was no rah-rah, if there was no announcer, I would go play this in a parking lot with my friends. I would.
Are you out to prove anything with roller derby? Personally, I grew up doing a sport that didn't get a lot of respect. And I was an ice skater.
Okay.
And we were always trying to get, you know, the type of skating I did into the Olympics. And it was always like, you know, rah, 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 take us seriously. Mm-hmm. Are you out to prove the same kind
of
thing?
Are we out to prove anything? Oh, boy, that's a really good question. I don't know. I'm sure some people are out to prove something. At this point, I'm not personally out to prove anything. I'm out to do this and have a good time and do my best still. Prove things to myself, certainly, absolutely. You know, I had to have my foot basically surgically reattached after the last time I broke it, and that could have been a career ender, right? It wasn't, because I had a thing to work for, which is a wonderful thing. I need a thing to reach for, personally. But yeah, I mean, I think there is an element of, well, sometimes existence is defiance, right? We need this. We the people who play this, need this. There's something about this that we need, and we would not do it. We would not throw our bodies at it if we didn't, and we wouldn't drive an hour to practice if we didn't, and we wouldn't lose time with our families if we didn't. Yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't know the answer to that question.
What would a career ender be if that wasn't your career
ender? That's a really
ender?
Good question, isn't it? Yeah, I've thought about that one too. I think I tell myself one more injury and I'm done, but clearly that's not true because I hurt my back and then I rehabbed it. I don't know. I think when I'm really, really, really ready to do other things, then I'll be done.
What is the question you're most sick of being asked about roller derby?
Personally, maybe it's, are you still playing roller derby? That might be my personal least favorite question. You know, I think a lot of people would say, is it real? Is probably their least favorite question, because yeah, it's a sport with rules mm-hmm. that we train for.
So the WWE thing kind of still haunts you?
A little bit. Not as much as it used to, mm-hmm. but yeah.
And what's the question you wish more people asked about roller derby?
It's not any one question, because I've been doing this for so long and it means so much to me, and it means so many different things to me, that I kind of wish I had a platform like this more often to tell people why it's wonderful and why it matters and why it's revolutionary in a lot of ways, that this sport that we made out of thin air now exists with 370-something leagues in the WFTDA. And there are athletes from all walks and all stripes who play it together, matters. And, you know, it's not any one question for me.
What's next for the Charm City Roller Girls and for the sport? And where would you like to see the league go?
Oh, boy. Well, hey, our next game is August 13th. Come on down. So what's next? We've got playoffs coming up. That's always exciting. Oh, what's next for the league? I don't know. You know, it's kind of funny. I'm kind of like the roller grandma on the league. So that question is for other people now, which is nice. I've taken my hand off the steering wheel at this point, and I have a lot of faith in the hands that the league is in. I don't know. I hope it remains fun for people to play. I hope that people get good things out of it and continue to get good things out of it. The sport's evolving. It's evolved. It's changed every year that I've played it, and it'll probably continue to do so.
Was it difficult to take your hands off the wheel, like you said?
Yeah, actually it was. Well, yes and no, because, you know, you can only have your fingers in so many pies, right, at once. You've got 10 of them. So in some ways, it was a relief to say, okay, I'm stepping back from this role or that role. But on the other hand, you know, you don't want to get founder's disease. I mean, sometimes you got to know when to let go and not be in the way when it comes to an organization that you've created from scratch, you know. And I think that's not unique to roller derby. You know, any organization is like that. It goes through these phases, right? Storming, norming, performing, whatever they are. So, you got to know when to get out of the way.
And when do you think that came for you?
Oh, I think there was a point where, you know, it wasn't like there were people in place making decisions who were supposedly empowered to make decisions, and they would still defer to me. And I would have to tell them, hey, you don't really need my two cents about this. You know, this is your baby now. Run with it, please. You know, and I realized, okay, well, you know, I got to get off the LLC. I got to get out of the way. We got to do a little better job of fostering other leadership within the organization.
What do you think that Amy, who co-founded Charm City Roller Girls 11 years ago, would think of it today?
Well, you know, they're not two different people. I'm still sitting here.
Yes, this is true.
I'm proud. I'm really proud. I'm proud that we're still around. I'm proud that we have changed careers for people with the skills that they've honed in the league. I'm proud that we have given a lot of people an opportunity to find parts of themselves that they hadn't known about or hadn't developed before. I'm proud of our gameplay. I'm proud of the fact that our league has continued to kick butt for so long. I don't know, I'm proud of a lot of things. You know, even things that didn't go so well, even things that turned out not to be such great ideas in the grand scheme of things, you know, they were learning experiences for people.
Well, Lady Kaboom, thanks so much for coming into the studio.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for the coffee.
Thanks for listening to Female Trouble. As always, you can subscribe and rate us on iTunes. You can also find Female Trouble on apps like Stitcher and Google Play, or on our website at baltimoresun.com/femaletrouble. If you're on Twitter, find Female Trouble at FMLTrouble. Our theme song is Dope Girls by Shifty, featuring Baltimore's own TT the Artist. See you next time.